This is a Socialist Caucus presentation on work of women's equity and access to care and treatment in Rwanda. My name is Marge Cohen. I'm going to moderate and give a small introduction and then one presentation. We have a exciting panel, though a little smaller than we had expected. I'll introduce the speakers as in order of presentation. We have all the presentations, but a couple of our speakers from California were not able to join us, but we have their presentations, and those are the ones that follow at the end. Our topic today in general is HIV and women's empowerment. I don't know all of you in the audience, but some of you I do, and hopefully the issue of how women with HIV and the care that they demand and need in your experience has led to a greater understanding of how women's empowerment in general in their lives would be the best way to actually manage the illness. Certainly that's what women with HIV have taught me. WEACT stands for Women's Equity and Access to Care and Treatment, and it's a group that started in 2003 by Anne Christine Dedeschi from California. And she actually was able to learn about the issue of women in Rwanda who were HIV infected from many different women's associations who were at that point talking with international groups about the difficulty of accessing HIV therapy for their members. The members told Anne Christine and others that the men in jail who had raped women during the 1994 genocide, purposely infecting them with HIV, they were getting medications for HIV. But the women in their associations, who at that point were very, very ill, this is 10 years after the genocide, were sick and were dying of AIDS, and they did not have access to medicines. So in 2004, we were able to go to Rwanda for the first time in April, 10 years after the genocide, on some funds from the Stephen Lewis Foundation. For those of you who don't know Stephen Lewis, he's a phenomenal diplomat from Canada, a passionate feminist who has spent an enormous amount of time as an envoy to Africa for the UN, really championing the importance of women's issues related to HIV. And they funded us to go and actually see whether we could fast-track HIV medications to women in Rwanda. So just to briefly mention what happened in 1994, 800,000 Tutsis and moderate Hutus were slaughtered during the genocide that took place during a three-month period. That's pretty well known. I think less well known and sort of equally relevant to today's presentation is that 250,000 women were raped during that time in what I think we can consider a synchronized HIV infection campaign, and the militias and governmental forces that were part of this actually did this purposefully to spread the genocide to the next generation. And of course, it was in Rwanda that rape was first declared a crime against humanity. It followed in other conflicts like Bosnia and others we're seeing right now, but I think the issue of HIV's relationship to as a weapon of war is less recognized, and we think on this panel an important one to recognize. This is just a woman that I took care of in October 2004 who is holding in her hand her HIV test results. And she'd gotten tested in 1998, but there'd been no, and found to be positive, but there'd been no available medications for her until that time. Now, that's not that unusual for all of sub-Saharan Africa, where still so many people with HIV don't have access to medications. But this is an example of, for me, it was even someone being able to keep the piece of paper, you know, for that long. And of course, obviously, wanting the therapy so much. But the other amazing thing she taught me was she said, you know, if you're going to go home and talk about what happened in Rwanda, please make sure to show my picture and show people what had happened, because many in your country might not know. And of course, your country wasn't helpful to stopping what happened to us in 1994. And these are the scars that she experienced during the genocide from particular tools that actually you'll hear more about. These are machete scars. And the women that we see in Rwanda often in our program and WEACT often say to us, well, were we infected with HIV because we had multiple rapes during the horror of the genocide, or was it because of HIV-laced machetes? And of course, we can't in our research or in our care answer that question, but we do know that it is part of it, our understanding of how continually important what happened during the genocide is to the everyday lives of women that we're seeing. So in general, WEACT views the issue of HIV in women as a global challenge that is very, very, very connected to gender-based violence. And so the issue of gender-based violence is, of course, paramount in a situation like we saw in Rwanda, but and we are seeing right now, but of course it happens not just during rape during war, but it occurs also in coercive sex and forced marriage and survival sex, and can be seen, of course, in post-conflict societies as well as all societies, and actually does happen all the time. If you couple that, gender-based violence, with HIV infection in countries that are particularly poor, and of course the Southern Hemisphere sort of fits that, you have increasing numbers of women all over in every part of the world being affected by HIV. So WEACT's approach to this is that it's a matter of justice, a human rights agenda, to ensure that women have access to HIV counseling and testing, that there is treatment for HIV infection without any financial or other obstacles, that there is also, as the women demanded from us and clearly needed, also treatment for post-traumatic stress, which we'll spend a significant amount of time on this morning, economic impairment, and again, similarly, what women absolutely demanded was food for themselves and family, education for their children through the reduction of school fees and availability of uniforms and books, and sexual, reproductive, and legal rights. So that's sort of the way we're going to have our panel this morning, to sort of go over these activities. Just to let you know that we learned about what women needed from focus groups early on and from our care continually. Initially, we met with about five Rwandan associations. Associations in Rwanda support the government's agenda and advocate to ensure that what the government does want to happen does happen. They're not sort of adversarial. These women met with us and shared an enormous amount of information early on about the services they would want, and that was how WEACT then proceeded to sort of frame its services. So our model is to provide HIV care in a women-centered, holistic approach without any financial obstacles, and it's actually run or advised by the associations that we met with early on, and now there's about 24 associations that bring patients to our clinics and do help us figure out new approaches and new things to worry about and try to fix. The women also, from the very beginning, wanted to have an agenda that included research to evaluate several things that they were most interested in. One was how malnutrition would affect treatment. Two, how the enormous amount of trauma that they experienced and are still experiencing their families affected their immune system and antiretroviral therapy, and also just how the drugs would affect them. So we are able to actually, we do have a research program that we'll just share a little bit about. And then what comes up regularly is that it's not just enough to sort of take care of women with HIV when you're taking care of women in a primary care setting, but every other issue of import health-wise and sort of socially rears its head. And the ones that we've been most interested in addressing are issues of cervical cancer being the leading cause of cancer of that women die from in sub-Saharan Africa if they live to die of a cancer, and very little available resources, no pap smears, etc. We're not going to talk about that today, but I just thought you should know about it. Family planning and maternal mortality reduction, obviously extremely important. A very high infant mortality and maternal mortality rates in Rwanda. And something we will spend a good deal of time on today is post-traumatic stress and depression. And then finally, the model of having income generation to deal with the economic empowerment that people so desperately need, food and nutrition, quality care and education for children, and legal rights. So just to give you a really quick sense of our research study, we wanted to look at what antiretroviral, that's what ARV is, therapy, its effectiveness and toxicity, the impact of trauma, depression, comorbidities, a bit about nutritional needs and cervical dysplasia. And we enrolled 900 women in May of 2005, 700 who were infected, 500 who were about to start antiretrovirals, and 200 who had a bit of a higher T-cell count, a better immune system, and weren't going to start therapy right away, and 200 who were uninfected. Half from each group had been exposed to genocidal rape in Rwanda, though the entire group, in terms of inclusion criteria, were in Rwanda during 1994. And the only thing I want to tell you is sort of a sense of women's empowerment issue is this is when women were getting informed consent, so they would watch this video that a college student or postgraduate student came to Rwanda and made for us. And the Rwandans said, the women in the association said, well, the best way to make sure that women who really had no previous experience with research would be able to understand what was going on is to have like a voiceover of someone from one of the associations say what was going to happen at each time. So this woman in Kinyarwanda, which is the language in Rwanda that people speak, went over, you know, what happened to the women, that there was an interview, an exam, and they'd get their blood drawn, and they'd get measured. But then they said, but, you know, the real way that people in Rwanda learn how to learn what's going on with something and really understand something is through poetry. And we said, you know, poetry and informed consent, it's so legalistic and, you know, complicated and overly complicated. We didn't think it would really fly and would be weird, but they said, nope, it's perfect, we really know. So the woman in the beautiful traditional Rwandan dress is a poet, and she took our sort of protocol and summed it up. So the 22-minute video has like 14 minutes of the first part that I said with the voiceover and about 10 minutes of her going through the entire protocol in a poem. And the best part, or the part that I sort of care most about in the poem, is when she describes confidentiality and how the data that, you know, where the women are sharing, which is very personal, very intimate data, will be ensured that no one who shouldn't look at that will look at it, and that it would really be protected. And to just explain, like, it will be combined with other people's data, and that only those people who have permission will look at it, and your personal data, you know, identifying characteristics will be removed. So the way she did it was, this is her daughter, and her daughter's holding a traditional Rwandan basket, and she goes through this whole discussion about how, think about the data, the information we're collecting being in the Rwandan basket, and the only people who will be able to open the basket are people who have, you know, you've agreed to look at it and compare the data with other Rwandan women in the study, and then we'll learn more about it and we'll share the information. So it's sort of a better way, I think, of dealing with confidentiality than we often do in our informed consents. What we learned, this is sort of like very initial data from the study, just to give you a sense of who we're seeing, is a large number of the women are widowed, some are married now or living with a partner. They're very poor, with over 87% making less than a dollar a day. Almost no one has running water in their home, less than 10% of electricity, and people are very, very hungry. Most people have primary education only, if at all, and so that the issue of having a DVD do the informed consent was pretty important. We've had great retention. After 2 years, over 90% of the women are still in the study, which, for those of you who do research in anywhere, I think you'd agree that that's just really great. We've had an excellent response to HEART with a CD4 count after the first year of more than 130 cells improvement on the median. We've seen an enormous amount of cervical dysplasia. Again, this is an unscreened population. Women here have never had a pap smear before, different from what we would see, and about a third have an abnormal pap, 10% having high-grade lesions. I'm not going to discuss our HPV data now. Just to share with you the issues of income generation in order to have women have the economic empowerment that they most want. This is one of the projects we have of women making dolls and then them being sort of sold in the U.S. or made for donations at this point. And then we also have several other goods that are being made, some beautiful bags. And then these are some of the leaders of the associations. And I just show you their picture so that you could feel their beauty and strength and confidence, because that's sort of what really, I think, helps us make the program work. So Mary Fabry is a wonderful friend of mine, but also